Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello everyone and welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. My name is Jules Gill and I'm taking the place, sad as it is to say, of Scott Telford. Bless you, mate. Rest in peace, mate. Rest in peace. You're in a better place now, at home with your wife. Cool. Right, so I'm joined today by Josh Brown. Isn't he so lovely?
Oh, am I?
Very.
You can be the judge of that.
I am, and I judge you to
Thank
be.
Thank you.
Two thumbs up. And we are joined by the equally outrageously lovely Ash Millman.
Two thumbs up.
One and a lazy thumb, a halfy thumb.
Ow.
Anyway, we're here today because we are talking about video game movies. Now, I, like probably both of you and many of you listening out there, love a good video game movie. And if it sounds like I'm depressed, but
it sounds so sad, Jules.
It's because of the fact that there's not been many good ones. That's the problem. And we're here today to try and tackle or answer the question, can you make a good video game movie? Yes. But why is it so bloody difficult?
Well, I mean, there have been so many over decades now, and you would think that Hollywood would get it right eventually, yet they keep making, in my opinion, the same mistakes over and over again. I do think there are good video game movies in there. We're going to talk about a few today. There are a few that I really love, as well as a few guilty pleasures, but I find more often than not, they always fall into that latter category. I quite like a lot of them, but not for the right reasons. Therefore, you know, lazy Sunday afternoons when you've got a bit of a hangover and you're thinking, what's on Netflix? And it's always Resident Evil 2 Apocalypse. I don't know why, but it's also that one. And I'm kind of fine with that, but it's so frustrating to, you know, be here as a video game and a movie fan and just realizing that Hollywood isn't realizing the potential of these properties and these characters that could make for excellent big screen adaptations, and yet they just keep fumbling it. And I wonder whether that's because they just don't get the source material or they don't understand it or what, because I think even though video games have come a long way and they're very popular, they're still viewed by a lot of people, especially, you know, older business executives as kind of, you know, a younger, unproven thing, whereas in reality, they are absolutely not.
I think people see them and think, oh, that'll be big bucks, because it's a big old franchise that's had loads of money pumped into it, and think they can do the same thing by just having a very small snapshot of it. But, like, obviously, that's not how it works. And I think as approaching this from the gaming side of you as gamers, you've got to embrace that we're going to be really possessive of characters and storylines and know them inside and out. There's people who play these games over and over again. And they're going to know it way better than anyone else, like, making the movie can know it, because it's your experience, it's your played, your active experience of this game. So then watching someone else in, like, a lead role as a protagonist act it out in a different way and take your character and turn them into something that is marketable is never going to be quite as appealing as seeing it yourself.
I mean, let's pick up on that point of agency, effectively. Like, when you are playing a video game, you are in direct control. It's why survival horror games are scarier, because of the fact that you are the one that is seeing your character get hurt, and it's an extension of who you are. But the way that video games characters are written are usually quite minimal in order to make sure that the player can invest on it. You get characters that don't speak, like, you know, Gordon Freeman and people like that. So when you take that and try and turn it into a character, which you have to do for a movie, and tell an audience what this person is, that's where a lot of the message can be lost, because you sit there thinking, well, that's not how I played this character, or this isn't how this person would react in this situation because of how my playtime went. But at some point, somebody has to say, oh, I've got to give them a motive. I've got to give them drive. And that's where it becomes a problem, because they have to write for these archetypal characters and just be like, well, what do we give them? Yeah. How do you decide what is a good character trait to have?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to adapting these stories, I think it's far more difficult than, you know, a book, for instance, where those arcs and those motivations and those characters are more well-defined. And we do have story-driven games that you would think would translate better to movies, but even then I don't think that they do, because you still have that element of agency and player interaction and their relationship being different to something that you passively see on screen. I do think that's a hard hurdle to get over, because you look at these movies and I think that writers and directors are thinking, well, what elements do we need to take and transfer? Yeah. What makes this game so popular? Is it the characters? Is it, you know, the action beats? Is it the gameplay? And it's hard to get your head around that and transfer that over to a movie that needs to be, you know, coherent and concise and have everything, you know, make sense within 2 hours rather than over the course of 10, 15, 20, 100 or whatever.
100%. I think that the massive scale and then shortening that down to a small amount of time is a big problem. But I think my perfect like video game movie would be something that just takes a snapshot or a side story or like a side quest or doesn't have to set up characters and motivation and everything from a game. Just says, okay, the video game exists. That's its own source material. We can play through that. And this is a spin-off to it. And it's like a little short story, kind of like Dead Space Downfall, like the anime movie.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. I think that was like a really good snapshot. You just want a snapshot. Yeah. You want a little slice. You want a little taste of what is out there in that game world that you then go and explore yourself, not an overarching, this is what happens in this game, put into a film.
Yeah. Because you'll lose so much in the context. I know that it's one of the biggest gripes that people who see their favourite novels and stuff getting translated to film, it's always the case of, well, they missed out this chapter. Where's bloody Tom Bombadil? I want to see a dancing man.
Where is he?
But it's like, when we got video games, if you actually like break them down to what video games are, I use The Last of Us as an example. Before I was setting up, I was like writing down, trying to think how I would make that into a video game film. And it's actually really difficult, because not only have you got so many different elements that are jumping around, it's connected by action sequences that if you were to watch them, if you were to just sit there and just watch that entire thing play out, it would actually be quite boring. Mm. It's one of the biggest complaints that people have for the Transformers films, that it was numbing, that you were maintaining a level of action that was so high, asking the audience to invest in that action level. It requires a lot of energy from the audience, and it just dulls. If I was to see Joel and Ellie run through some boxes and shoot some people and then run away from some raiders and then run away in this, and it was just constantly shooting and being like having the cordyceps people like chasing after them.
The clickers.
I couldn't remember their name for a second. I was still like
infected, not zombies. No, people. The cordyceps.
Yeah, like it would be draining. Like that wouldn't actually make a good film, because you're not actually telling a story in that sense. You're just basically going, this is here and that was in the game, and that's what Silent Hill did wrong. I loved that film for how bad it is.
I like Silent Hill.
It's a bad film, though.
I don't apologize for it. I like it. And I'm not going to say it's a bad film. I'm not going to make excuses for it. I like Silent Hill.
No, but that's absolutely fine. But one of the biggest problems I had with it is that it was disconnected from its own source material, in the sense that they chucked those sexy nurses and Pyramid Head in there.
Yeah, it doesn't have context.
But it doesn't have like any relation to the character. It was like, it's going to annoy me. I always get the two confused for the first two protagonists of Silent Hill. It's Harry, isn't it? Who's the one?
James
Sunderland and Harry. So James is connected to Pyramid Head because it's his sexual frustration. It has nothing to do with the character in the film.
I kind of liked it as them getting lost in this. I know it's not the point of the film, but I kind of liked them getting lost in this game world that was already set up. Like Silent Hill was this place with all these things in that have attacked these other people, and they're seeing like the remnants of it. Sort of. That's how I kind of like enjoyed it. I was like, okay, here's all these things from the games that other people have experienced, and now they're running through it as well with the whole like split personality girl with the two good and evil things that like formed it all. I don't know. I thought it was interesting.
But if they'd set it up as that, just saying like it's echoes of the past, then I would have been completely on board, and maybe the film as a whole would have benefited from that.
Yeah.
But I have to admit,
you have to write that on yourself.
There is one bit in that film that is pure perfection, and that is when Pyramid Head rips the skin off that woman and throws it against the wall of a church. And I was just like, that's the best scene. That is hands down the best scene of the entire film.
Well, I think Silent Hill is a good example, because for me, the biggest issue when you're making video game movies is taking like the iconography and not kind of justifying it, kind of just throwing it in as fan service. And I always feel like when video game films try to just mimic the plot or the general beats of the game, it's always just kind of diminishing returns. It's like, as games become more cinematic and as the storytelling becomes more mature, you don't need to then have it in live action, because the cinematics or the in-game cutscenes accomplish that just as well as any movie can. It's essentially like you're watching an animated film, and I don't think that putting real actors in it and then limiting the scope and kind of changing things around, that's not the true version, because the true version already exists. For me, it's different to adapting a book, because everyone has their own idea of how things look in a book, and you can do more with it. They're often, you know, you're exploring the inner psyche of someone rather than just the action. So there's a lot more you can kind of do with it and realize it in a way that is separate. But the mediums of gaming, at least gaming storytelling and movie storytelling, are so similar that I just spat all over you there, Ash. I'm so sorry. I saw it spray. Anyone watching this video could just see it like shower over this entire table. I can't remember what I was saying.
I was like, I saw myself out to it. I was like,
I'm so sorry. I was so in the zone.
A refreshing mist. Yeah, it was. You were talking about adaptations for books.
Like. Yeah, essentially, like for me, it's closer to when you see Hollywood adapt a foreign language movie, like a horror movie, like Wreck becomes Quarantine. Yeah. And it did indeed. It's not much. Like the beats are the same in kind of. It's similar in aesthetic, and yet something's kind of missing, because we've seen that before. We've potentially seen it done better, and you're kind of thinking, why does this movie exist when there's already a great version of it? And that's what I get from movies like the most recent Tomb Raider, which try to adapt parts of the game and kind of, you know, look like the game, but also it did its own thing in places, and it's sort of like, who's this for? Is it just for the fan service? Is it for movie buffs or what?
Well, this the Tomb Raider one is actually a really good example, because I feel like that was one of the first video game movies to come out that was actually like critically well received, as in not panned, and it did really well in terms of the box office as well. And that was because basically they leaned so heavily on tropes that were set up from Indiana Jones films. Like you literally could just take her out and put in like another character, and there would be nothing to make it feel like it was Lara Croft. Like it has, because it's like, oh, the father figures like abandoned them. Okay, that's Indiana Jones. Like it's the tomb raiding from Indiana Jones.
The tomb raiding.
No, you know what I mean? Like
the tomb raiding from Tomb Raider.
she doesn't even raid that many tombs, does she?
No, she doesn't.
And it's like,
what? Takes a while for the tomb raiding to.
And it's like, she's rich. Like, is that a character trait? Like, there was that amazing scene where she has the aerial ropes, and she's she's rolling up and down them. Yeah. That was brilliant. That's not in the game. Like that was never in the game at all.
I like the bit where she's fighting that big mechanical robot thing in that VR training or whatever it is.
See, that really confused me at the beginning, because if I was to think of one thing that was not at all Tomb anything Raider. To do with Tomb Raider, it would be a robot. Like, it's because of the fact that I'd just be like, dinosaur.
Yeah.
Just make it a VR dinosaur, and at least then I would have been like, oh, cool. Like, I would have had a bit more connection.
I think you've got to give them some slack as well. I think video game movies are held up to such a high standard when they're supposed to be good schlocky fun.
Yeah.
Like the Doom movie, good schlocky fun. Good schlocky fun.
Dagger in my heart.
Schlocky fun. I think you've just got to accept them for what they are, that it's inspired by and takes these influences from, but isn't going to be the same thing, because you guys are saying you want a movie that doesn't boil this down into 2 hours and wipe over it and everything, and then saying, oh, but they didn't have this from the game. This was different in the game.
I totally accept this criticism, because I feel like we're asking the impossible. Yeah. Like everyone has this impossible ideal of what it should be. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to achieve that. It just means that it's so difficult to get right. Like people would say that at this current time, Detective Pikachu is one of the best video game movies around. That somehow managed to capture an incredibly hard license to do right, which is the Pokemon things, because again, the scrutiny levels are insane. Yeah. They managed to put it with actors who people didn't think it was going to work with. Like, if you imagined Ryan Reynolds as Pikachu,
aggy about that, considering Pikachu's gravelly tones from the game.
Everyone wanted Danny DeVito to be it. And, like, and true, that would have been really good. Yeah. But it's just kind of like how that film managed to take all of these very risky elements and turn out so well is an accomplishment in and of itself. And I personally have not played the Detective Pikachu games. I wonder if it's because of the fact that they based it on that spin-off series of the Pokemon franchise that they had less expectations from people because it's not it isn't as popular as the main entry series. Like, it's just not. It didn't sell anywhere near as well as the other ones.
Yeah.
People weren't even aware that it actually existed as a subset for a long time. So when it was Detective Pikachu, people were like, oh, I'll give it a shot. Mm. Like, it's because it had no weight on it.
I kind of feel like that worked, especially in some of the best video game movies work so well because even if things sort of change or they make decisions that you might not agree with, like Ryan Reynolds as Pikachu, I feel like the people making it at least get and understand what the core of it should feel like. Whereas I think for a lot of, you know, games like the first Tomb Raider, as fun as they are, just kind of don't really get what makes the originals great. They understand the iconography and they understand the character names, but they don't quite, you know, understand what they're built around. And I feel like to me that is almost a direct comparison to the early superhero movies that we had, especially in the early 2000s, that would take these characters that studio execs knew were popular but didn't understand why. They just thought, oh, it's people, you know, in sick-looking costumes beating up bad guys, and that'll be enough, that'll sell. We'll whack on Evanescence on the soundtrack, which I fully agree with, by the way, and then, you know, we'll push it out. We just need to have a plot, just need to have characters. We don't need to understand what makes these people tick and what's made them endured for so long. We just need to have them there, and that will be enough. And I think that idea of just that being enough has translated to video games, and we've seen things, video game movies, we've seen things like Detective Pikachu kind of rebuff that in a way and say, no, you can have your cake and eat it too. You can have this mass market thing that satisfies, you know, fans and knows exactly what it is and kind of isn't ashamed what it is either.
Yeah. I guess what you're looking for is the successful video game movies are the ones that don't just act as shell films, as in it's not just another film with a skin on top. Like Detective Pikachu is effectively like a buddy cop movie, but it's got so many elements that make it stand out as different to that genre.
Yeah.
That's what makes it interesting.
I think some of the best video game movies are the ones that aren't actually on a particular video game. Like, I don't know if this is another sacrilegious thing to say, I really like Ready Player One. I like that.
I've
I know it's based
it.
On a book, and I know that that ties into it and that sort of thing, but that it's a video game movie that isn't about a video game. It's its own made up. It's about video games in general. Yeah. It's about pop culture. Like Unbreakable being one of the best comic book movies, but it's not based on a comic book. It's about comic books sort of thing. So like, I think that's a really good way of approaching it, that maybe we need to have more of that before they start diving into the actual source material and doing it like that way.
I mean, I still go back to what you said before. That snapshot idea is the best way to do a film because you're not actually directly comparing it. You are saying this is tonally going to be very different to what you've seen before and can take risks in ways that other things don't. Like, I'm struggling to think of what ones that are successful that have been these sort of snapshot style things. I mean,
Doom isn't successful, but the idea of Doom being an absolutely blank slate game where it's like, okay, we're just going to go fight monsters and then putting a story on that, it didn't necessarily work for that film, but something like that would work if someone did it right. You know what I mean? Like, if you just took this base narrative of, oh, we are killing monsters. Okay, why could that be? What is this spin-off? How could that be on another planet or sort of thing? I think that would be an interesting way of doing
it. Why is it not called Evolve? Yeah, Evolve the movie.
Evolve would work so well as a movie.
It actually would.
It would work better than the game did as a movie.
Definitely would.
And someone who enjoyed Evolve, yes, that would be much, much better as a film. Because I had a great lore around it. I think you need to look at things that have lore or that don't have lore and don't sit in the middle. Like, it needs to have loads and loads of lore, like an Elder Scrolls movie could. Oh, God, that would be difficult.
It would be incredibly difficult.
If you find the specific thing to do it, like you could do Khajiit Caravanners, like you could have like a whole community of that and just do that bit.
But think about it this way. With the Witcher TV series, they have managed to take what could be considered the right approach to adapting a video game material because they are giving it time. They are actually allowing it like to tell its own story over multiple episodes so that they can tweak and tailor things as it goes on. Pitching a Witcher movie, would be really hard to get right. I mean, like, even simple games with simple like plots don't stick the landing. Like Assassin's Creed, it has a relatively simple thing if you take out all of the mind bollocks that's in the anime stuff. Like, if you just focus on it being about assassins, Prince of Persia has a relatively like simple storyline, but it didn't save that.
I remember when people were saying like Prince of Persia the movie was sort of one of the best video game movies there was, and that was such
me at the
faint
time.
Praise.
That's
me too, man. But like, you look at it and you think, why is this kind of? Yeah. It's at once too simple and too bloated. Like, it was too long and yet too kind of just odd and strange, but I think The Witcher is a good comparison. I completely forgot that even happened. But,
yeah,
you know, like the fact that you give them time over the past few, like over an entire series or an entire season, you let it breathe. And I think The Witcher, helped because it was based on books.
Yeah, I was about to
start with, which, you know, might make it more of an anomaly, but I think you have that solid foundation, well, you let it just exist. And that's potentially better.
I can't remember who it was, but there was a director who said that adapting from books is much easier than any other thing because of the fact that you've got it there and the screenplay is basically for you to edit out. You're basically taking stuff out rather than adding much in. If you go back to video games again and you break down what actually happens, it's like, okay, we've got an action scene. This character says this to something. They're usually minimal dialogue. Like, you're playing a game for like 25 hours sometimes, 40 hours, 100 hours. Warcraft, 1,000 hours. And yet, you're trying to boil all that dialogue down into this two-hour most thing. It just sometimes doesn't work. I mean, have you guys watched Warcraft?
Yeah, I saw Warcraft. It pictures, you know. I thought it was okay. I have no... attraction to the actual source material. I never really played World of Warcraft or any of the other Warcraft spin-off periphery stuff, but the film was all right.
As an introduction point, it made me want to play Warcraft more. I'll try it out.
Yep. I've got a lovely quote here from the Independent's Jack Shepherd, who said,
"Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns."
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
It becomes almost impossible to keep up, not helped by the lack of individual character development. A quick example concerning our lead human protagonist. Both his relationship with his plot device son and with the love interest are rushed, underdeveloped, and nearly lacking all emotional oomph. After two brilliant films, it feels like After two brilliant films, it feels like the fanboy within Duncan Jones got carried away with Azeroth's minute mythology, leading to a film filled with tons of references to the wider world, but no real soul of its own.
I think it's hard. It's really hard when you take something that's high fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible to make something new and fresh and interesting in the same way that, like, The Witcher has managed it, Game of Thrones has managed it. Like, it's rare, though. There's so much high fantasy out there. To do it right and to do it properly and to do it in a way that engages people is hard because it made all of its tropes already and they're really hard to break free of. If you're doing a high fantasy thing, then it's going to follow a formula. And Warcraft had to follow a formula which it couldn't really break free of because it made all these tropes to begin with. I'm angry about it. Made all these tropes to begin with the game and has loads of wonderful stories and wonderful ways of interacting with that. I'm not a Warcraft player, but like I know about it and have seen all the joy that it has brought players and the way that it's crafted itself into one of the biggest MMO ever. But it did that by establishing its own tropes. To make a movie from it, you're going to have things that feel rote and similar and familiar because it's got to say all the same things that it's done originally.
Well, the other thing as well is that most of the video game films feel similar in terms of their message because of the fact that there was a study that went out where people were looking into why comic book films don't translate to comic book sales. And it's like it's a big thing where even though Endgame came out and grossed, what was it, like billion?
Over 2 billion?
Many money.
Much money. Like, it didn't result in sales for comic book lines. Apparently they were at an all-time low, and even like a debut, a new series outsold the Avengers line that was going on at the time of printing. And they were saying that just because you have a huge video game audience, that's not what the films are actually trying to target, because it is much smaller than a film-going audience. I know that a lot of us out there will play video games and go and watch films, obviously, but to target that one franchise that has a dedicated, hardcore audience, that's not what they're going to want. That's still less money than going for a wider approach. Here's just an action film with a skin on top sort of thing. Like, that will make them more money.
Well, that's it. If you double down on kind of, you know, making a movie for the fans or whatever, and you're only trying to go for that pool might be massive in the case of Warcraft or something, which, like Ash said, is the biggest MMO ever. But even then, you're already limiting outsiders, you know what I mean? So you're already limiting the market, and then you limit that even more by... if you don't get everything right, part of that audience is going to, you know, erode even more when people are annoyed by it. Or if they don't like a casting choice, it's going to erode even more. So that pool gets smaller and smaller as you try to market the movie. And to Hollywood, that's just not what they want, because they want to make a massive return. They want to appeal to everyone. They want to make, you know, essentially they want to make the next Avengers Endgame. But that only comes from building the brand and appealing everyone. It was comic book nerds that helped Marvel succeed in the first place, but ultimately it's not comic book nerds that made Avengers Endgame the highest grossing movie of all time. It's people, regular people who weren't interested in those characters who got interested over the course of the series.
Like Sonic.
We need to talk about that in a minute. But there's just one more thing, which is video game movies, they're expensive to make.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about them, because they're so fantastical and outside of reality for the most part, like, they must require huge budgets to do it. And it was apparently one of the, me and Adam Cleary have been talking about it a while, which is the Final Fantasy Spirits Within is a good movie with a few flaws. One of the biggest flaws is that it has the Final Fantasy name attached to it.
Yeah.
If it didn't, then he says that it would be like a much, much better received film. And I have to agree with him on that one. But they did that because they were like, oh God, we need a franchise to anchor this down. They made the mistake of thinking that it would be it would translate into huge sales and support, but it just didn't. Like, it was people going, this isn't Final Fantasy.
Yeah. I really like Spirits Within, and that's probably because I never played Final Fantasy growing up. Like, when I watched it, I hadn't played Final Fantasy, so I was like, oh, what a great movie. I was crying when the people were dying and the tentacles. I was like, oh my God. Like, I thought it was really emotional. But I fully accept that as someone who wasn't a Final Fantasy fan. Like, if I look at that as a movie and go, oh, I enjoyed that, it's because it's a movie. If it took Final Fantasy off it, I agree.
I guess it comes from a sense of entitlement. Like, it must do all of this because of the fact that we play these games, we invest hundreds of hours into them, we feel like we are part of that universe as much as the character that we're playing as. So when we see it in any way besmirched from how we believe it should be, then it's like, it's no, we distance ourselves, we don't want to do that. And that's not the right way to live, obviously. We shouldn't be doing that, but it's very hard to disconnect.
Well, that's it. I mean, for this industry, as much as I love it, I feel like the fan base, the most rabid fans, are perhaps more entitled than, you know, movie fans or something. They kind of feel as though they have ownership over these characters. And you see that even when you get a new sequel, that changes mm-hmm. something, and then there's a big backlash, or something like that. So when Hollywood are trying to make a movie version of it, they increase that risk even more, because they are going to take far more liberties than a game developer or publisher would with their own series, especially if they haven't consulted the game developer or publisher, which again, I just think leads to that chance of just kind of annoying everyone. You either try to appease everyone then annoy the fans, or you try to appease the fans and annoy the fans anyway, if that makes sense.
It's a very, very hard balance to get right. But this leads us to our next point, which we will talk about, the upcoming one, Sonic.
Yay!
Because that was a film that has been changed before it's even come out because of backlash from the fans, the core audience. And Sonic does have a bizarrely rabid fan base. I mean, this is the thing. Like, I love the first three games. Mm. I think that they are fantastic. I like Sonic Mania. I like Sonic All-Stars Team Racing, but I don't like anything else. But that's just my opinion. I just don't like any 3D one. Just don't like 3D ones.
I've never really played Sonic, which is why it was such a surprise when I started doing this job and realized that Sonic fans are the most passionate, will have your lunch, you know, fans ever. Because I only watched the cartoons and kind of was interested in, you know, Sonic as a brand rather than Sonic as a game. But there are millions of people who love Sonic as a game. I want to see that, you know, sort of done justice in movie form. And then the movie trailer comes out and Sonic looks like me on a bad hangover, and you're thinking, no, something's gone terribly wrong here. We need to change this. And then there was a huge backlash, not just by fans, but from regular people watching the trailer and going, what the hell are you doing?
Who is this mouse?
Why is his teeth so big?
Why does he have the digital cat fur technology from Cats? Like, what's going on here?
Meow.
And then they pushed that back and changed it. But what will be the litmus test for this, I think, if Sonic makes loads and loads of money, I think that will encourage studios to be more kind of, you know, I don't know, what would you call it? Like kind of adhere to the source material more, take it more seriously, try to replicate it more faithfully.
This film looks like it's, apart from having Sonic in and rings, what does it have to do with
Robotnik's in it as well?
Robotnik is in it. He ain't fat. I'm not happy about that.
Jim Carrey, he's got a nice little mustache.
Now, I will love Jim Carrey for the end of time. He is the maddest man around, and I just respect out the door for him. But is he going to deliver a good Robotnik? He will deliver a memorable performance, but will it be a good Robotnik? And the reason I ask this is because, what character development does Robotnik have?
He's in the game,
he's just evil.
And then he gets more evil.
And now, but in this one, we're probably going to have like, he was abandoned as a child, which made him evil because we have to have a sympathetic villain in this day and age. And then it will be like, but I'm really funny and I'm really quippy. So we actually end up siding with him for some of the time. But wait a minute, is he an anti-hero? Is he going to have a sliver of good within him? Because apparently we need to have all of these complex emotions. No, just be evil.
I think it's just going to be a Sonic movie, to be honest. I think it's just going to be Sonic runs fast, is mouse, eats rings. And then there's going to be Robotnik being like, no, stop mouse, I want rings. And that's going to be
Mouse. Stop running.
I think it's just going to be a big goofy thing. It's like the Angry Birds movie, apparently the best rated.
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes has Angry Birds 2. The movie.
Not even the first one.
Rated at 73% fresh rating. Detective Pikachu only with a mere 68%. So what does that say?
That's more Angry Birds.
More Angry Birds. I think that does mean that Angry Birds 2, the sequel, is not only the best video game movie of all time,
but the best
video game franchise of all time, the best movie of all time.
Right, well, let's just go from the best to the worst in that case. So what we're going to do now is, to close out this lovely podcast, we're just going to rag on some bad video game movies, because what a better... That's where I get most of my enjoyment, by basically just complaining about things. Let's kick off things with the best. Mortal Kombat!
Oh, I can't believe we got this entire thing without mentioning Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. Good movie or bad movie, Josh Brown?
Good movie, but for the bad reasons.
That's my opinion of it.
She's doing her best reptile impression. It's a bad movie, but it is a banterific one.
That's it, yes. Yeah, it doesn't even make any sense, and it doesn't have any blood in it. And Johnny Cage is kind of bad. Goro is like... He's the weird animatronic... daddy in the world, you know what I mean? He's got all these arms. He gets punched in the bollocks at one point. And that's all I remember from this film. I don't remember the plot. I remember the bit in hell with stop you.
Yeah, and Sub-Zero.
That's really
yeah,
good.
That was good.
But I can remember, like, images. I can remember.
Yeah. I literally have no memory of
yes,
it.
Like, yeah, that's
but,
it.
But that's kind of like a Vietnam flashback then.
Yeah.
That's,
almost,
like, that's
yeah.
just kind of like, you're like, boom, reptile, boom, like, scorpion, boom, nightwolf, whoa. Like, it's a film that never took itself seriously, which is why I don't think it's a terrible movie, because of the fact that there were so many asides and in-jokes where the characters knew they were spouting absolute cack. But the theme song, oh, that will forever live beyond the game itself. Oh, chef kiss all round. I mean,
and
it was
a slow one for
yeah,
you there.
And spit back on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was immortalised at Scott Tilford's wedding, if I recall.
It was
like
indeed.
That Mortal popularised it. Yeah,
his mum screaming that out.
I always get the Mortal Kombat, but this is also sacrilege, but the Mortal Kombat movie and the Street Fighter
oh,
one.
But we're oh, but wait, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about Street Fighter, baby.
Okay, right, so do you like Street Fighter?
It was all right. I like, you know what I mean? I like bad movies.
Yeah, but,
I like
no, but you have polarizing. Either you love it or you hate it. It's
no,
not right.
It's a bad film, but that doesn't mean it's not enjoyable.
No, it's definitely enjoyable.
Yeah.
it's so bad, it's great. It's just like having Jean-Claude Van Damme as Guile and having none of the characters represent any of their characters. Traits is just fantastic. It's that bit where what's his name? Ralph? Is it Ralph? Ralph Julio?
I do not know.
Ralph Silver?
That's the one. Yes. Mm. He plays M. Bison yep. in this, and he is having the time of his life. And do you know what? Massive respect for that guy, because he only took that role because
yeah,
his
yeah.
grandkid or kid
yeah, yeah,
wanted him to do it and loved Street Fighter. He goes, so I'll be M. Bison. So apparently all of it was yep. done in that tongue-in-cheek way, and that's why I love this
that's
film.
That's so... I did not know that, but that makes me like this movie more. I've never actually seen it. I've only seen clips of all the yeah. bad parts. So in my head, it's just this excellent compilation of terrible
oh,
clips.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
so, so fun. But I do feel like, you know, movies like that, movies like Mortal Kombat, have a certain charm to them that
yeah.
I
yeah.
think some modern ones don't, like Prince of Persia. I don't know what defines yeah. the Prince of Persia movie, but I know even through only seeing clips, what defines the Street Fighter movie, you know what I mean?
But we went through like different eras with this, didn't we? Because we had the video game movies, like the Street Fighter ones, Mortal Kombat, and I can't remember the Super Mario Brothers one, which we'll touch on in a minute. Like, they were bad movies because they did not give a toss when it came to their source material. They kind of had the elements there, but then they were just like, whatever, we're just going to be silly because video games are silly. That's the message they were trying to say. Then we moved into this super dark and gritty ones with like Punisher. Not one of Punisher. It's
Punisher had
a video
game. It's not that one. It's the one with. Come on, think. Alone in the Dark.
I was going to bring up Alone in the Dark as the worst one.
That is the worst one.
I've never managed to watch it all the way through because I fall asleep at the middle every time. Same point. I literally get knocked out every time I watch it.
But that was trying to be gritty and dark, and that so that brooding thing. And
the game, good though.
And then we had the overblown blockbuster sequel style stuff where we had like the Warcraft stuff and things. And now we're hopefully getting a move forward into more personal.
We'll see. Considered brooding, serious movies that have a touch of fun, like Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, we're always going back to Sonic.
I mean, we should definitely talk more about Alone in the Dark because it's who is the actor, the main guy?
Honestly,
in
I can't remember. I was trying to scrub it from my memory every time I watch it because I think, oh, I'll watch this again. Maybe I'll like it this time. Fall asleep and scrub.
Is it Christian Slater?
That's the one. Yeah, it's Christian.
It's not good.
Awful. Like, if you're watching this, Mr. Slater, like, I don't mean you any harm by this, but seriously, that was your worst acting gig I've probably ever seen you in.
At least he's bounced back now. He's doing quite good things now.
What's he doing now?
I don't know, but I've heard he's bounced back and doing good things now. I've definitely seen him in movies that aren't Uwe Boll movies, which is, if anything, a big comeback.
He needs to step away from ever doing a video game movie again because he systematically ruined Blood Rain. Why are you laughing? You like it? You Postal?
Why?
No, I'm just... Whoa, don't give me the nasty, squinty eye of doing
it. No.
I'm just laughing because he did so many video game movies. Like, he just did so many.
Why did they give him so many?
Slurp them all up and then just...
He did
file them all out.
He's passionate about video games.
Oh, God, I just remembered he did the Hitman one.
He did all sorts.
Didn't he do the Hitman one?
I don't know if he did it.
But the Hitman one was
awful.
That
was also awful. Both Hitman... How were the two Hitman movies?
I know.
How have there been so many and how are so many of them bad?
Hitman would work perfectly as a film, though, if they did that right. Yeah. It's just like... James Bond. Yeah. James Bold.
Yay, there he is.
The pitches you've had on this podcast so far, your Sonic Mouse pitch and now this. Why are you not making these movies?
I'm
not
sure it'd be better. That's why. Yeah, that's what happened. I'd take all these things and be like, wow, let's have some fun.
Uwe Bollo over it.
Very good. Very good,
good, fellas. Good.
Nice crack, friends. Right, so there's a lot of bad video game movies out there.
A lot of good ones too.
Yeah, there are.
There are fun ones.
I'm hoping that we're moving towards them getting better because they took the absolute piss. I mean, Street Fighter with the stealth boat, like that was bad.
That was bad. Did you ever watch it? And we're just ranting about movies now.
We're not having a conclusive end to this. We're just going to rant until we end up tired and gassy.
Tekken was also bad. Did you watch any of
those
movies?
Oh my God, how did I forget about
why
Tekken?
Why do all the... It's always the fighting movies. It's always the fighters. Dead or alive.
The best fighting game movie is the Black Mirror episode of Fighting Vipers.
Oh, do you know what? I'd actually totally agree with that.
That's it. Definitively, that's what it should be.
That's what you do it, yeah.
Bad porn parody, that's all there should all be.
There we go, that's what we decided on. Yeah. I think that's our conclusion.
I think that's what Dead or Alive was trying to do. Like it was very boobalicious towards it. Yeah, it was a weird film.
Good film, Ratchet and Clank. But have you guys seen it?
It's a beautiful movie. I got it. I watched it because I bought the Ratchet and Clank reboot that was the sequel to the film, but also a reboot to the original game. Yes. Very weird.
It wasn't like a remaster, was it? No, it was a redo again of it, which I found. I played the original one and loved the original
one.
So
good.
And I was interested in the movie, but then just played the game again and stuff.
Yeah, the movie just the game takes stills, clips from the movie, and just like stitches them together. And the movie's fine. It's just. Again, it suffers from the problem of, oh God, we've got a lot of narrative to fill and a lot of dialogue to talk.
Yeah.
Can anyone write dialogue? And it's like, hello, mouse.
Let me eat your ring.
Whoa.
I know. PG. Gold floating rings. Okay.
Porn parodies are the best fighting movies.
Oh, we're always back to this.
Yeah.
If we were to make a video game porn parody, this is how we're going to end this podcast. What would it be? Like a video game porn parody.
Oh,
Pac-Man. And Miss Pac-Man.
Fat Man.
No.
Pac-Man and Miss Pac-Man.
Yeah, I know. He wants couples. Pervert. Couples love.
No, that's nice.
It's not perverted.
That's loving into pervert.
They're just giant chomping heads.
Yeah, but then when the ghosts get involved, oh, there's a spiritual aspect to it.
So we're having a ghost gangbang then?
I think so, yeah. Jeez. I mean, I'd be up for making that if you guys are up for making that.
Whoa, I'm not starring
in
this.
I didn't say we had to star in it. I'm just saying we can make it. And that's all I need to know. If you're in for this,
you know
sign
what?
This contract.
Sign me up, brother. Sign me up.
Yeah. What you in?
I would do a... I would do a video game porn parody of Medieval.
Oh, God, clanking bones.
Yeah, clanking bones.
Clanking bones.
Yeah.
I'd Sly Cooper, like the...
Oh, you and Sly Cooper. Just get a room, man.
100%. No, that's a hot game. Like, it's like... It's a good racket.
That is not
him and Carmelita Fox.
Hot game.
You want some couples love? Him and Carmelita Fox. Ooh, some very loving, baby. Like, I'd be down for that.
I'm trying to think of one to top that. But there's not really one, because, I mean, you've gone for the furry thing. You've gone for the couples nice love with the ghost gangbang optional. Yeah. I'm just trying to think.
It's bonus feature.
Think. What are my favourite video games?
Street Fighter?
No, I just know what Scott would say if he was here.
Come on.
He'd have a Metal Gear Solid porn parody.
Yeah.
Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, that's upset me.
Yeah, it has a bit. It's upset me too. But what a perfect way to end this podcast with a little bit of depression. Thank you very much for joining us through this wild and rambling discourse on video game movies, why they're good, why they're bad, and some that are just plain porn parodies. We hope that you enjoyed that. And please let us know in the comment section. Give us a 5-star rating on Acast or wherever you listen to your podcasts. As always, I have been Jules Gill. This has been Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And this has been Ash Millman.
I love the devolving into ASMR jewels when you get to the end. Mm. Ah, goodbye, everyone.
Hush tones ready for the porn parody.
It's the sound of my spirit escaping from my body as I die. It basically, I power down to be awoken again on the next What Culture video. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. Hope you have a fantastic day, whatever you're getting up to. We'll speak to you soon.
I'm preparing this arm to wave for so long.
Yeah, you locked it. You're like, bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.